Hello there. Today is Thursday, May 4th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Secretary of State Tillerson singles out China in the new approach on North Korea. Is peace possible in the Middle East? President Trump thinks so.
I'm committed to working with Israel and the Palestinians to reach an agreement.
Facebook is hiring thousands to monitor and remove violent posts. Also ahead, the latest news out of Hollywood. It's all on today's International Edition. FBI Chief James Comey says it makes him mildly nauseous to think that his agency might have had an impact on Donald Trump winning the presidency when days before the vote, his agency reopened a probe into Democrat Hillary Clinton's handling of classified information in her private email server. Comey, director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the country's top law enforcement agency, told a Senate panel on Wednesday that he agonized over disclosing the new investigation after clearing Clinton months before of any wrongdoing.
Potentially finding the emails that would reflect on her intent from the beginning and not speak about it would require an act of concealment, in my view. And so I stared at speak and conceal. Speak would be really bad. There's an election in 11 days. Lordy, that would be really bad. Concealing, in my view, would be catastrophic. Not just to the FBI, but well beyond. And honestly, as between really bad and catastrophic, I said to my team, we've got to walk into the world of really bad. I've got to tell Congress that we're restarting this, not in some frivolous way, in a hugely significant way.
The FBI normally tries not to disclose investigations of candidates shortly before an election, so it won't affect the outcome. But Comey said not for a moment did he consider whether the new probe might help Trump win the November vote. On Tuesday, Clinton partly blamed her loss on Comey. Joining me now to talk more about this, former CIA officer Glenn Carl. Glenn, thanks for being with us. I know you were not an FBI agent, but what is your take from Wednesday's hearing?
I wasn't in the FBI. I was a CIA officer, but I worked closely with FBI officers for many years. Mm-hmm. So I have a good feel for the culture and their investigations and counterintelligence approach and capabilities and so on. But to me, the testimony of Director Comey clarified nothing, cleared him of nothing, and just showed that the decision he made was, whether intentionally or unintentionally, I think it was not consciously, partisan one that damaged the Clinton campaign and affected the presidency, and that there's no justification really to have done so based on Bureau procedures, Department of Justice procedures, the way he handles and the Bureau handles other investigations, such as the Russian investigation concerning ties of Donald Trump and his entourage with Russian intelligence.
He said that if he had to do it over, he would do it again, and that anyone in his position, given the situation that he came upon where he felt like there was more evidence of Hillary Clinton emails that could be possibly open to investigation, he said he had the option of withholding or making it public. Does that seem to make some sense?
Well, it makes sense from the perspective that most of us repeat the same errors over and over. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense, no. Because the procedure, according to the Department of Justice and FBI, in practice, regulation, I think perhaps even law, is not to reveal an ongoing investigation, which they don't do, which they did not do with respect to the Trump campaign, which they did do, or he did do, with respect to the Clinton campaign. So, no, it doesn't hold water. In my book, I write a lot about what does one expect a senior official to say after a disaster? Does the person say, oh, my God, we made all sorts of mistakes, our assumptions were wrong, our actions were wrong, the conclusions were catastrophic? Or does one say, we have done our best, we serve our nation faithfully, we work very hard, we check our results, and we check our conclusions, and we continue to move forward as best civil servants can do? Well, obviously, one says the latter. So one shouldn't expect too much from someone who really goofed.
Did any lawmakers press Mr. Comey on why he chose to come forward about the information he had regarding the Clinton email issue and not
the issue
with Donald Trump?
Yeah, he was asked that, and his answers were that he would do it again, that he felt that it was his duty to do so. He knew it would be controversial. He knew for him it would be personally catastrophic, but that he has a clear conscience, although it was a tough decision. And then he made a bizarre and meaningless distinction. He said something to the effect of doing what he did on the Clinton email investigation would lead to a lot of problems. But if he sat on it, it would be catastrophic. But he doesn't say why. And then he doesn't explain why his behavior differed for Clinton than for all other investigations. It was an explanation that was fundamentally empty.
So in other words, what you're saying is that he didn't really give lawmakers a clear understanding as to why he chose not to reveal that there was an investigation regarding the Trump campaign in Russia?
I don't think his words clarified anything. I don't think his words clarified anything, no. No, he just said, oh, this was tough. I made the best decision. I knew it would be hard. I'd do it again. That's what he said. Well, great.
What was the point of this hearing?
It was a normal, scheduled oversight hearing for the FBI director to testify about ongoing issues. I don't think it had formally anything to do with the election or Clinton emails or anything like this, but of course it gave Congress the opportunity to question him about what he did on the Clinton emails, what he is doing on the Russian involvement with Donald Trump, and so on.
Was there anything in this hearing that came up regarding the Trump, any investigation of the Trump campaign and Russian interference into the election?
Well, there was a question or two asked about it, but his response was that his goal is to not make any news, have nothing to say, and that it is standard bureau practice to say nothing about ongoing investigations.
All right. Former CIA officer Glenn Carl, we appreciate your perspective. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. U.S. House to vote on health care on Thursday. Hundreds of bids submitted for the U.S.-Mexico border wall prototype. Education experts say international students are safe and welcome in the U.S. And former President Obama unveils a design and vision for a presidential library in Chicago. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. President Donald Trump and the leader of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, pledged on Wednesday at the White House to try to achieve a diplomatic breakthrough for Middle East peace.
It's something that I think is, frankly, maybe not as difficult as people have thought over the years, but we need two willing parties. We believe Israel is willing. We believe you're willing. And if you both are willing, we're going to make a deal.
Standing alongside the U.S. president in the Roosevelt Room to address reporters, Abbas, speaking in Arabic, said he believes the parties are capable under Trump's, quote, courageous stewardship and great negotiating ability to bring about a historic peace treaty. Trump is expected to visit Israel near the end of this month. Tensions on the Korean Peninsula remain high as the Trump administration has stepped up efforts to restrain Pyongyang from further nuclear tests. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has singled out China in the Trump administration's new approach to pressure North Korea to stop its provocative program. Tillerson said there was an assumption when Trump took office that China had limited influence on the regime of Pyongyang, but he says that's just not so.
And so that's what we've been doing, is leaning hard into China to test their willingness to use their influence, their engagement with the regime in North Korea.
According to a Washington-based monitoring project, new satellite images of a North Korean nuclear test facility appear to indicate the reclusive regime is preparing for a nuclear test. Now, despite President Trump's expressed willingness to meet with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, it seems unlikely to happen anytime soon, as neither side is prepared to offer any concessions to warrant such a high-level summit.
We are ready and prepared to engage in talks when conditions are right. But as you've heard me say, we are not going to negotiate our way to the negotiating table. That is what Pyongyang has done for the last 20 years, is cause us to have to negotiate to get them to sit down. We'll sit down when they're ready to sit down under the right terms.
Joining me now for more on this is James Kelly, former Assistant U.S. Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs under President George W. Bush. Thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate your time. How much of a concern do you have for the current threat of North Korea, and is it bigger of a threat than in the past?
It is a growing threat, but not a necessarily bigger at this time. The part that certainly concerns many Americans would be the development of a proven ability to launch ballistic missiles with nuclear weapons included at the U.S. mainland. That's a capability that they have not had before. The North Koreans' capability against the South has certainly been major over many, many years, even without nuclear weapons.
If China hasn't been able to convince them to stop developing these weapons in the past, what can it do now that would be different? Or what has the Trump administration done to get China more on board with this?
Well, the Trump administration is obviously trying to convince China to do more. And they may have some marginal successes. I don't expect that China is going to drastically change its policies. But there are many quiet things that I think China could do, particularly with North Korean activities inside of China, of obtaining sensitive items that may be useful in their nuclear and missile programs. I think China could do a great deal more of that without any public announcement at all, or without threatening the collapse of North Korea. So I wish the administration well on this, but I don't expect any great or visible changes in China's attitudes towards North Korea.
The president said that it could be that we have a conflict with North Korea. Are you concerned that we could have a conflict?
There's always that risk. And as a statement that there could be a terrible war, maybe a surprise to President Trump, but it's certainly not a surprise to all of us and to all South Koreans as well, who can remember the tenseness of this border over all this time and the size and capability of the militaries across the demilitarized zone. What I think has been missing in particular is recognition of the lies concerns in this, and the recognition that South Korea's concerns, at least at this time, are really considerably greater than America's concerns. It's not just something between Pyongyang and Washington, D.C. This is a matter that very much involves all the South Koreans, and with a delicate and uncertain political environment in South Korea, I think that's an important factor that I'm not sure that the administration has given adequate attention toward.
What do you make of the president's comments about being honored to meet, or he would be honored to meet with Kim Jong-un?
Well, the president says lots of things that are very hard to understand, and that was one of them. But I think, put it perhaps most favorably towards the president, we can say that he is willing to take all kinds of measures, including a meeting with Kim Jong-un, if it's necessary to resolve this problem. But that recognition of Kim Jong-un in the face of the enormous human rights violations is certainly unwelcome.
Is there any way that you can see that we can solve this ongoing crisis between
North Korea? Something will happen in North Korea, and we'll spend a lot of time explaining why it was easy to understand. But until then, we're going to have a long-standing tenseness. It goes back before the war of 1950, and it's been a tense border ever since then, with ever-increasing capabilities of military equipment, including this nuclear weapons now in the north. And so it's always been dangerous, and it is now. We can hope things smooth it out, But until there is at least a modification of behavior in North Korea, it's going to be a dangerous place.
All right, James Kelly, former Assistant U.S. Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs under former President George W. Bush. Thank you so much for your time, sir. You've been listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hello, I am your host, Shaka Salee. Every Wednesday night, Trade Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the future of sub-Saharan Africa's development lies in the hands of its youth. In her new book, Ambassador Robin Renee Sanders says growth and progress is being driven by small and medium-sized enterprises. That's on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
VOA's International Edition continues now with some entertainment news. And for that, we're joined by Rare.us content editor Nicole Michella. Nicole, you've got some news about an actor who has for several years been rumored to have had some health issues.
Val Kilmer came out over the weekend and admitted that he is, quote, healing of cancer. He didn't specify what cancer he's recovering from at this time, but there has been rumors of some sort of oral cancer. Michael Douglas said in an interview last year that he was not doing well, that Val Kilmer was suffering also from oral cancer, which Michael Douglas went through and is a survivor of. And right away, Val Kilmer said, I haven't talked to Michael Douglas in 2 years. He's making this up, and denied and denied and denied. So now he's come out and said, actually, I am very sick, and I'm trying to get better, but my voice is different, and I'm still feeling under the weather. So I think now his fans are really rallying around him and sending him those good get-well-soon wishes, now that he's been honest with them and said that he is actually sick instead of denying it.
Well, of course, we wish him all the best. That's a tough thing to go through, and not knowing whether to come forward as someone who's a celebrity or to keep it to yourself, for sure. And then we've got some news about Live with Kelly Ripa's show. She's gone through a few hosts. Sounds like the search may be over.
Yes, the search is over. She announced on Monday that her new full-time co-host is Ryan Seacrest.
Wow.
And this comes a year after Michael Strahan kind of shook up Live with Kelly and created a little bit of drama with Kelly Ripa when he announced he was leaving to go to Good Morning America. He left May 13th of 2016, and then now May 1st is when they filled his seat officially. I was really surprised that it was Ryan Seacrest, because she had a lot of fan favorites still in. This past year, she had Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen and her husband, Mark Consuelos. It seemed like Ryan Seacrest kind of came out of the blue, but I think the fans are really into it.
Boy, that guy has to be the hardest working man in Hollywood.
Definitely. I think he's going to keep a home in the Los Angeles area, but also move to New York City, because that is where Live with Kelly is filmed.
And is he going to keep his radio show?
As far as I know, and I believe he also has a podcast.
Wow, he is a busy
boy.
Busy,
busy.
Yep, that's for sure. Rare.us content editor Nicole Michella, thanks a lot. Now, let's see what's happening in social media with Andrew Palchewski. Hey, Andrew, what you got for us?
So you always have to be careful when you post something on social media, because it might have unintended consequences. Now, this often happens if you say something to someone and maybe accidentally insult them or upset them. But you also have to be careful when you're posting photos online, because it may reveal things that you don't expect. And this was the case for a rabbi named Rabbi Shmuley Boteik. He's a well-known author. And he was visiting the White House for Israel Independence Day and meeting with a number of White House staffers, including mm-hmm. Steve Bannon, one of the president's senior advisors. Now, he took a picture with Steve Bannon and put it up on his Twitter account. Seemingly innocuous. The problem was that behind them in this picture was Steve Bannon's whiteboard that he has in his office of all of the plans that he has for the administration and their rollout. So it had listed all of the things they want to do in the first 100 days that we just surpassed, and then going forward in the administration. So you saw things like, there was a section pledges on Obamacare, then there was a section pledges on immigration, pledges on ISIS and national defense. You saw things like lower the corporate tax rate, which is something that President Trump proposed, tripling the number of immigration agents, hiring more Border Patrol agents, suspending the Syrian refugee program. All of his plans laid out right there and all over social media. So it did not take long before this came out on Twitter for people to go and parse through it and make the lists and try to decipher what was going on.
For sure.
Now the internet knows all of his plans. Not that necessarily secret.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like too much secretive stuff.
No, but it gives a sense of what they're prioritizing.
Right.
Some of the items also had check mark next to them, which it's not clear if that means they've been completed or that those are the focus items that they're trying to prioritize, but probably not information that Steve Bannon wanted to get out and be dissected along the internet and throughout social media.
That's right. Nothing's a secret anymore with social media. You know, you just anything can go viral.
Yes.
What else is going on?
So one of the things that we've talked about in recent weeks going viral, very unfortunately, are the number of cases where people have been either assaulted or in some cases murdered or have committed suicide and streamed that live on social media. We talked a few weeks ago about that case in Cleveland, Ohio, man was shot and killed, and it was broadcast on social media on Facebook. Well, Facebook is working to combat that now, and they've announced that in addition to the 4,500 people that they already employ to check posts and vet them and make sure these kind of things don't go out on Facebook, they're hiring an additional 3,000 people. So they're going to have 7,500 people at least, this is just the start, to review these posts. Now, Mark Zuckerberg wrote on a Facebook post, of course, that's how he gets the word out. He said, over the last few weeks, we've seen people hurting themselves and others on Facebook, either live or in video posted later. It's heartbreaking, and I've been reflecting on how we can do better for our community. And he goes on to say, if we're going to build a safe community, we need to respond quickly. And that's where he announces these additional 3,000 people that are going to be hired. It remains to be seen if it's going to have any impact. Like I said, they already have 4,500 people that are hired to do this, and these videos still get through. There are millions of Facebook Live videos that go out each day, probably even tens or hundreds of millions of videos and photos that get posted on Facebook. So it's not clear how this is going to work, if these people are going to have things that are flagged and then they can vet them. But the hope is that by hiring more people, they'll be able to stop these things from getting out sooner.
All right. Hope so, too. Thanks so much, Andrew. You can follow him on Twitter at APAL. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Well, the next installment of the Marvel Comics series, The Guardians of the Galaxy 2, opens in U.S. theaters this weekend. As VOA's David Byrd reports, the story continues the thrilling adventures of Peter Quill, Gamora, Drax, Rocket, and Baby Groot.
The Guardians of the Galaxy return in the second film, starring Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, and the voices of Bradley Cooper as Rocket, and Vin Diesel as Baby Groot. This time, the Guardians have been enlisted by the leader of the Sovereign Race to protect valuable batteries from an interdimensional monster. In exchange, they will get Nebula, Gamora's sister, played by Scottish actress Karen Gillan. But Rocket, a genetically engineered raccoon-based bounty hunter, steals some of the batteries for himself, and the Sovereign sends drones to attack the Guardian ship. Those drones are destroyed by a strange figure known as Ego, a living planet who has taken human form and turns out to be Peter Quill's father. Then the adventure begins. Chris Pratt, who plays Peter Quill, a.k.a. Star-Lord, says he thinks audiences will get a kick out of this movie, which is set shortly after the first installment.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, we worked really hard. I think the fans will be really, really happy. I mean, honestly, I have a hard time imagining someone walking out of this film and not being totally thrilled and excited with the 2 hours and 17 minutes that they just enjoyed. And my guess is and my hope is that they'll want to get in line and go back again and see it for a second time. I wanted to.
Zoe Saldana, who plays the green-skinned assassin Gamora, says she couldn't turn director James Gunn down when he asked her, even though it meant several hours a day in the makeup chair.
I mean, I can't say no. Nobody else said no, so I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I'm going to have to come back and go through the arduous process of makeup and becoming Gamora every single day for 4 hours. But then once you get to set, it's all worth it, you know?
Kurt Russell and Sylvester Stallone also star in the movie. Russell plays Quill's father, Ego, and the actor says he had to watch the first film before he could understand the characters.
I had to have the tape sent so I could see it. And then I was interested to read the screenplay, and and see, you know, where they were going with it. And once I did that, I was very much saying this would be great to do. But when you're going to join something that's beloved by so many people, the first time around, you want to make sure you don't drop the ball. And so I took it as a real challenge to try to meet that. And I also feel like, you know, you're going to take a leap of faith, which I'm glad I took.
Director James Gunn says he didn't feel the pressure making this film that he did on the first installment because he was familiar with the characters and knew audiences loved the first film.
I think it makes it a lot less pressure. You know, in the first movie, I'm sitting around, I'm waiting. I don't know if anybody's going to see the movie or not. I didn't know if the movie was going to be too weird for people or not. And when people embraced it, it was exciting. And making the second movie, knowing that people are out there waiting for this film, made it a lot easier, a lot less pressure.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2 also stars Dave Bautista as Drax the Destroyer, Michael Rooker as Yondu Udonta, Chris Sullivan as Taserface, and Elizabeth Debicki as Aisha, the leader of the Sovereign People. The movie is rated PG-13 for scenes of sci-fi action and violence, language, and some brief suggestive content. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Speaking before the House Armed Services Committee, Admiral Harry Harris, commander of the U.S. Pacific Command, called North Korea the most immediate threat to the security of the United States and our allies in the Indo-Asia Pacific.
The only nation to have tested nuclear devices in this century, North Korea has vigorously pursued an aggressive weapons test schedule with more than 60 ballistic missile events in recent years.
Such tests include a failed missile launch on April 16th. North Korea has also ratcheted up rhetoric against the U.S. and its allies. These ongoing provocations are why U.S. President Donald Trump ordered a thorough review of U.S. policy pertaining to North Korea upon assuming office in January. In light of the growing threat, the time has come for all of us to put new pressure on North Korea to abandon its dangerous path, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson told the U.N. Security Council.
I urge this council to act before North Korea does. We must work together to adopt a new approach and impose increased diplomatic and economic pressures on the North Korean regime.
Secretary Tillerson presented a three-point plan to the U.N. Security Council, calling for full implementation of already standing resolutions, suspension or downgrading of diplomatic relations, and increasing North Korea's financial isolation. In an interview with Fox News, Secretary Tillerson explained that China, a major trade partner, has a key role.
We know that China is in communications with the regime in Pyongyang. They confirmed to us that they had requested the regime conduct no further nuclear test. And in fact, we were told by the Chinese that they informed the regime that if they did conduct further nuclear test, China would be taking sanctions actions on their own.
Our goal is not regime change, Secretary Tillerson told the Security Council, nor do we desire to threaten the North Korean people or destabilize the Asia-Pacific region. He noted, however, that diplomatic and financial levers of power will be backed by a willingness to counteract North Korean aggression with military action if necessary. We much prefer a negotiated solution to this problem, he said, but we are committed to defending ourselves and our allies against North Korean aggression.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.